All right. We are here. We are Galexis, and welcome. It is a pleasure to be sharing with you this day one of the most important pieces, one of the most important thresholds, you might say, of your whole spiritual journey. All right, so we'll begin again. All right, we are here, we are Galexis, and welcome. And welcome to one of the most profound thresholds of your spiritual path. And we're saying welcome to the threshold because today we're going to address this most important threshold, and we're going to enable you to step across it, to move across it into the ultimate spiritual experience where you are reunited with the divine. Now, it's all about your ego. Today is healing the destructive ego. Becoming your authentic self. You see, we did a seminar recently called Expanding Beyond Your Box. And in that, we talked about how you expand and expand and expand until you are whole and complete, one with the divine home, where your origin, your return there triumphant, having learned how to be God, Goddess, all that is, yourself. Your spiritual journey is you. And so it is important that your you is authentic, that it's true to you. And so expanding beyond your box delineated the six sides of the cube. Not that your box would be shaped exactly like a cube with equal sides. But we have been addressing these specific sides. We've addressed your the first one we addressed was belief. We did a seminar on changing your beliefs, change your life. We had on another side a self-image. We have done expanding your self-image as a seminar. The third one is your physical body. We have not done that. We plan to do a healing series so that you can bring your physical body up vibrationally into alignment with your expanding spiritual self. The fourth one is scripts and contracts. Now, we did a workshop called Breaking the Ties That Bind You. You can find it under workshops on our line, where we broke vows from other lifetimes that held you in. There are some that we also had to healing your relationship with your family, had to do with breaking contracts with your family members. And in the Love and Healing series, we also talked about your new story, which was breaking the old narrative, breaking the old setups, and opening up to the new one. And we also, in that sense of healing the old scripts and contracts and so on, we also did a seminar called Healing Your Younger Selves. All of these are available on the website. And they're part of the stages and parts of the steps to get you to this expanded oneness level where you can merge with all that is. So where you can surrender your separateness, where you no longer are separate. Now, the Aquarian age that we are in has a particular orientation that is important for those of you who are wrapping up your evolutionary journey, looking beyond life and death and physical plane and living in 3D and yearning to return home to the greater dimensions and beyond the limitations of the illusion and dualities that are here in the world. That's your destiny. And as part of your destiny, these six sides form a very important matrix, you might say, that enables you to work in this 3D world. Today, we're doing side five. We're talking to you about the life strategies. Now, there is a sixth side, imagination. And we've done some. We have a love and healing called Pushing the Boundaries of Your Imagination. But we do have more coming soon on that. Because if you don't get this number five that we're doing today, if you don't heal the destructive ego, the distortions of your identity, of who you are, and so on, will block your capacity to imagine. And you cannot create anything or be anything until you can imagine it. All right? So we're going to be, in a sense, doing double duty by opening up your imagination, opening up all these other sides while we are also focusing on the fifth side. The strategies for life, the number five side, is generally where you develop your response to life, where you interact with your world, where you learn and grow by this interaction. And it's generally how you respond, how you react, what strategies you have to deal with the things that are present in your life or that come at you. When you're young, it seems that life just kind of comes at you and you're like, okay, there's this, okay, there's that. And you're just responding as it just comes at you. And because you haven't been really trained from the get-go by your parents and spiritual teachers, and because you don't remember who you are, that's part of the condition to come into this lifetime. You have a tendency to kind of grab onto whatever strategy you can to deal with your life. So today we're talking about the strategies that you developed with your ego. You and your ego put together these games, which is basically manipulation, games, agendas, ways to kind of play around the rules, so to speak. And those are rules that you perceive to be limiting you. All right, so, but what this means is that you cease to be authentic because you lose a connection with your inner truth when you're busy trying to manipulate the world outside you. So until you heal the ego, which is your co-conspirator in this manipulations and ego and these games and so on and this and these agendas, you can't be whole. You cannot be authentic. Right? So your future will always be distorted. What you create will be distorted, and into your present life will bring you consistently similar limitations and issues and so on, repetitive over and over from the past. Now, you've done a lot of work. You've done a lot of awareness work. You've done a lot of the understanding. You've done processes. You've done all sorts of healings. You've done all sorts of growing. And we don't mean to suggest you haven't done that. But what we want to do is really finish off this whole ego limitation thing so that you can manifest freely, that you can receive in your life, that you can be visible and feel safe and comfortable at the same time. And the only way to do that is to really, in a ritualistic, profound way, to work with and heal this destructive ego. Now, you cannot have an ego unless you're separate from the divine. This separation from the divine for all of you happened at birth. Before birth, before you come down from a causal astral plane, wherever you're from, and descend into the physical plane, while your mother is pregnant with you, you're basking in light. You're basking in the love. You're floating in a sea of love and happiness. And this is to compensate for the tremendous pain that your body is going through, growing so dang fast. It's like humongous. You keep doubling your size. You have to get all these programs right for your body. And some of you who have experienced some lifelong issues have discovered that sometimes the fetus feeds in on the mother's emotions to create a certain distortion, even in the physical body or in the emotional body. And so that when you come out, you are like, what? You're separate. Now, again, there's a compensation given you by your spiritual team, your higher self, your soul, your spirit, and your guides, as straight down from God Gandhi's. And that is that at first you don't recognize that you're separate from your mother. You've been in the womb, and all of a sudden here you are, and hopefully you're celebrated and received and loved and held and fed and all those kinds of good things. And so there is this period of time where it seems that, okay, you're kind of ooched through into this life to where you don't feel isolated and alone. Now, some people, like the channel, for example, was premature and ended up in an incubator. And that has kind of imprinted her sensitivity to light and darkness and the diurnal schedule, because they keep the lights on in the incubators sometimes just about all night and everything. And there's a kind of disconnect that happened there. But after 3 days, she goes home with her mother, and so the bonding there begins. And this bonding goes on until you basically begin to realize, hey, you know, I can stand up, I can walk, I can move around. I'm actually a separate individual from my mother. I am unique. I am me. I'm different. Mother's there. I hope she doesn't go away anywhere. Oh my. But you know, that's my safety. That's my tether. That's what I need, is that mother there. Well, that generally doesn't happen till about 1.5 to 2.5. You begin to realize that you're an individual person. When that happens, then you come to a decision point. There's a certain sense of power that comes when you realize, wow, I am distinct. I am me. I'm different from my mother. There's a certain power. That's when you're able to say no, and you're able to resist really successfully, and the terrible twos are upon the household. But at that time also, there is that sense of looking at your life and saying, okay, I'm here, I've made it to my individual self now, and I'm ready to begin this physical earth journey. And it's a time when a child then has to make that decision, and they do. They make the decision, okay, I'm going to stay. Because sometimes this separation is traumatic for a child, and so the child thinks, well, maybe it'd just be better to quit here and go back home. And which means that, you know, there's something would be wrong, or that sometimes that happens even earlier with crib death and so on. But generally, by the time you're two, you've made the decision. Okay, we're in here, we're in for the long haul, we are here. And it's a very awesome decision. It can be pretty overwhelming. But you do make it, and so you begin to work with your ego, because your ego is the one that tells you what your boundaries are. It helps you distinguish what's self and other. Now, when you're first born, you cannot gestalt anything. You have no depth perception. You have no idea of what any outline means. You have there's no distinction. It takes at least 2 days for your brain to compute 3D. That's the point at where the ego begins to do its boundary definition work. And that's at 2 days. But at 2 years, you and the ego start working together about getting what you want. Because now that you are not one with mother and so on, then you've got to find some way to get that love and that attention, which is love, that you need. And so so you begin to utilize the ego in the way that it was meant to be. Your ego is a part of yourself. It is like in neurolinguistic programming, or NLP, they talk about your parts. And in processes, you talk to your parts. You talk to the happy part or the sad part. You talk to the part who made a particular choice. You talk to the part who wants this and the part who wants that. You can distinguish the parts, and then you can converse with them. The ego is like a part. The ego part has to do with the coordination between what you get from outside, what you give and what you get, and how it crosses a certain boundary. This boundary from your personal space into the world. There is a boundary. A lot of times it's even delineated as your aura, that you can see that the edge of your aura, that when it comes into your auric field, then it comes into your personal space. All right, so your ego defines your personal space. And of course, when you're born, the child, the immature ego, and you see this with adults who don't ever grow up, the immature ego says, I'm the center of the world. I'm it. You know, the world revolves around me. And so the ego is the one that determines your personal space. How big is your personal space? If you have a really big personal space, then you're easily feel violated or feel stressed if someone comes into that personal space. For some people, the personal space is just 2 or 3 feet out. For other people, it can be a whole room. It's been seen that children who've been traumatized will have huge personal spaces, and because they want to see if danger's coming from a distance, right? So there is a sense of danger when you are separate, because in a way you realize that you are alive, And you still feel a bit eternal because you're connected to your eternal soul. But at the same time, there is danger in the environment, and it's up to your parents to kind of protect you from danger and try to teach you what it is so that you don't get yourself hurt. Okay. Now, the ego's job is, besides defining the boundaries, is to go out there to get what you want and bring it back into your personal space. Now, how does the ego do this? First of all, the ego reads what you desire, where your attention is going, what your intention is, and then it goes out and finds something that is aligned to that, something that matches that, to bring it back. However, it also has to work with your intention. With your context. So if you have negative emotional states, or you have limiting factors, or little limiting beliefs, or anything like that, then it can't really work very successfully in bringing you what you want, because it'll bring you what is in alignment with your emotions, with your thoughts, with what you believe, with how you're oriented to your life, et cetera, et cetera. It will bring you whatever's consistent with that. It'll be consistent with your who you are at that point. You are what you think, what you feel, what you know, believe, et cetera. That's who you are at the time. So the ego will bring something that's related to that. So, as you are a child and you're pretty, and you have to give your power away because you just don't see how you have power. You can put on a tantrum. You can do what you can. A lot of times, children, by the time they're 3 or 4, they've already learned how to manipulate their parents. They already have their parents around their little finger. Their little egos are really in charge of things. And so by the time that you're 3 or 4, you already are picking up a devious strategy, because somewhere along the line, you don't know for sure if you deserve whatever this is. All of a sudden, there's some kind of shame, the parents are angry at you for something. You must be bad, you must be wrong. All this psychological drama that comes in age 3, age 4, we notice that children make certain types of major metaphysical spiritual choices at different ages. And from 3 to 4 comes a sense of weakness, or not deserving, or not being powerful enough, and being dependent on the parents and the family and whatever to be able to exist and to get enough love and all that, and very often in families with older siblings, you also pick up this whole sibling rivalry kind of thing, in which there is a competition going on for the love of the parents, or for attention, or whatever it is, and somehow or another that they are, you're competing with them for that attention. There's some children that are very upset even if the father is wanting time and spending time focusing and conversing with the mother. I want mother, you know, it's like competing with daddy. The competition starts coming in, and with competition comes, well, we've got to somehow or another, we've got to get attention. We've got to compete. And a lot of times you learn from your parents, from older sibs, from playmates as you grow, you learn all sorts of techniques on how to manipulate, how to lie, you know. Okay, who spilled this? Did you spill it? No. Who spilled it? They did, you know, whatever. That when the channel was young, her mother would laugh when she would try to avoid being responsible for something, and say, "Oh, Mr. Nobody, huh?" There's a poem about Mr. Nobody that the child always points to, that Mr. Nobody did it, you know. So there's all sorts of ways that a child thinks, a parent, and of course the parent having been a child too and learning manipulations and games, basically teaches the child through not just actions, but there's also an inner context of the psyche that the child picks up. So the child doesn't have beliefs in everything already set up going on that are authentic for it. So it'll pick it up from the psyche of the parents. It'll pick it up from the context of the environment. And this is what you start out with, is your context from your home, from your family, from your caregivers and immediate surroundings. And so, of course, then your ego goes out to get something, bring something back that is consistent with what's in your family energy, what's common in the family system. And of course, that seems true. It seems well, that's the way it is. All right. So these beliefs, the beliefs given to you, are picked up so strongly, you think that they're true. You just don't. You just do the best you can. You cry. You complain. You fight. You do whatever you can to get what you want. But when you are shamed, and you have that shame there, and the ego goes out and brings you back something that's aligned with your shame, you're very disappointed, you're very upset, because still thinking that you're at the center of the universe, you're actually, as a child, you think you're entitled. There's enough of you remembering that you have everything, that everything is yours, that everything is gifted to you that you want, which happens on the other side. And so in this side, you think you're entitled. And you think that it should be a certain way. You should be loved. Your parents should be a certain way. And if they're not, it must be your fault. And this shaming that happens for you, which generally starts in around 3 or 4, will get spillover, and you'll shame your ego. It's like the ego brings it back. You say, "That's not, no, I don't want that. You brought me the wrong thing. I'm entitled to something way better. Bad you." Now, the ego doesn't really have a personality. That's really up to you to do. But the ego gets this message that it's not okay. It gets a message, it's not retrieving the right thing, no matter how hard it works, it just doesn't retrieve it, and so it gets pretty pissed at you. The ego gets angry at you because you're shaming it, you feel shame yourself, you're projecting on it. And you take everything personally, and so the ego brings you something, and you go, "Oh, that's not okay. This somebody's attacking me." Well, the ego is the one that said, "Look, there's outside and inside, and it's a big world out there, and there's competition out there, and you've got to earn love. It obviously is not, you don't deserve it. It's just not given to you. You have to be a good girl or a good boy, and you have to earn your love. And you have to be more charming than your sibling." So when that happens, then you basically adopt this idea, everything's your fault and you're a victim and so on, and you get caught up in drama. If anybody's dramatic, it's is children. Children, and of course, it goes over fast. But it's because underneath it all, there is still this energy of love in the universe, and at times, children can totally tune into it and totally be in a very blissful kind of state of mind. But when it's engaging with the world, it starts to be difficult. It starts to be painful. By the time you're around 7 or 8, you've basically adopted all the negative beliefs, attitudes, choices, decisions, thoughts, feelings, all the context that your family has to offer you. You're also aware of issues that are repetitive, and you have all the drama and all the patterns pretty much established, the initial patterns of your psychological dramas of your life. And but by age 10, you've pretty much gotten your childhood situation kind of managed. You kind of know where you stand, whether or whatever, and in the family, and you kind of get a balance over your learning it at this point. But by age 10, you get there's a door that opens up in your psyche. Maybe it's more appropriate to say a window, because you look out and you see the future. There's a glimpse at the future. And you can see the future, where you're going to be limited, or how successful can you be, how much authentic you can be, how happy you're going to be. There's this whole opening and this whole vision of it. Now, it's pretty overwhelming when it happens. And most people don't remember when it happens. A few people do. But when you get that first glimpse, it's like, oh my. How am I going to deal with all of this? I guess I'll figure it out on the way. But boy, this looks really huge. So basically, you turn to your ego and you say, look, there's all this limitation out there, and I want to have a better future, so you should somehow or another, figure it out for me. Well, by that time, the ego has started to interpret to you what comes to you. It not only brings you stuff, but brings an interpretation or a message with it, like you're full of crap. Or you're not okay, or maybe you really succeeded there. You're the best. The ego will bring you messages. So the ego realizes, okay, I've got to bring a message. I've got to answer this why. I've got to answer all of these questions as to who you are, and why, and what about the world and about life. So the ego goes and it puts together everything they've heard from the family and your inner mind talk and all the information they can find about you in the conscious, subconscious, unconscious mind, and even pulls from other lifetimes and so on, and puts it into a story, puts it into a narrative, puts it into a myth that explains your life for you. Who you are, what your life's going to be like, and all that. Who are you? And so the ego brings it back to you and says, there, that should settle it, right? But even though you don't like what the ego brings back, since you're never satisfied with it anyway, and receiving is difficult for you already, but you assume that it's correct. Okay, it must be true. And so this ego must be the authority. But now the ego's by this time has really gotten really tired of you, gotten really pissed by being shamed and being beaten up. and it turns destructive. And when it turns destructive, it's like it splits into two. It's like the good angel and the bad angel and the devil, you know, or whatever. It kind of splits in two. And the good and the ego, the part of the ego, and the ego splits into two parts. Part of the ego just says, I really can't deal with this, and I don't want to be, I can't deal with the shame and all that kind of stuff. I'm just going to kick out. I'm not going to deal with anything. And it curls up in a little ball. And the other part, which is kind of like a brat, it's like acts bratty. It's, that part pretty much takes over and dominates. That's your destructive ego. The part that curls in a little ball and hides is a part of your ego that would be doing its job and is kind of the positive ego, but you're not using it. You're listening to the lies of the negative ego. You're listening to the destructive ego, the one that is basically telling you how life is when it's not necessarily very true. And when this negative ego, when this destructive ego takes over, essentially you lose a good chunk of your intuition. Because prior to that, you have been able as a child to tell who's authentic and who's not. And if somebody is talking to you and they're coming from an authentic place or loving place, and who is coming from a manipulative place, you are smart enough, you're intuitive enough, you can read people. It's part of your survival technique, is to read people. So you've been doing that. Okay, you've been reading people. But by this time, when you get this whole narrative about the world and how you have to compete and you have to win, or if you don't win, you lose, and all of this kind of stuff. When you adopt that, you begin to think, well, I've got to really construct a way to deal with this that really works, because this is pretty intense. And so you basically shut down your intuition because it gives you conflicting messages to what you have to do. So a lot of people who are extraordinarily intuitive and psychic and perceptive and even creative as very young children, by the time they get into adolescence, by the time they reach 10 or 11 or 12, by the time they get into there, they've lost their intuition. There's a surge of intuition right at puberty because there's an opening to soul, but then it closes. And of course, it's well known in Hollywood because they love to do all the psychic stuff with poltergeists and so forth, so on. And it's always a 13-year-old girl, right, who's suddenly is very psychic and is picking up on the poltergeists and whatnot and so on. But there is that window when you go into adolescence. There is a window that opens up to soul, and you have a greater connection to your psychic reality, to your spiritual self, and so on. But before that, you're shutting down. And then after that, you shut it down. And the door really closes more afterwards. Okay? So the whole culture seems to be on this competition track. So you end up being afraid of being shamed, criticized, judged, excluded, isolated, rejected, abandoned, embarrassed, and humiliated. Have we covered it all? That is the underlying terror of adolescence. And so you imprint it there. Now, one of the things about your life is that, and this is about the illusion that you live in. You've heard about living in the illusion. It's illusion because it's all temporary. Your life, your physical life is temporary. Your soul is permanent. So your soul is not part of the illusion, but your body is. Right? And in order to live in the illusion, in order to create the illusion, the divine created two polarities to work together, and people call it the feminine energy, the masculine energy, to work together to create reality. And so it's reflected in your reality that there is generally the female has the egg and the male has the sperm and so on. And you've got this whole, working back and forth to be the way it is. That's the basic duality, okay? Now, duality, though, means that there are two individuals, and the ego basically takes charge of the relationships between individuals. The ego takes charge about the relationship within yourself, in your own inner duality, and you end up feeling conflicted inside yourself. In your own mind talk, you're conflicted. The ego gives you messages from both sides. It gives you messages you're good. It gives you messages you're bad. This is very confusing. And also because the reality as an illusion is always set up. Your reality is perfect for you. It's created exactly and precisely for you. And it's set up to reflect to you what you're thinking, what you're feeling, who you are, etc. It's a mechanism by which you grow. And we call this the mirror. It's mirroring stuff to you. Okay, so when you're a child, you look in the mirror, maybe you play with your identity. Maybe if you're a girl and you really are a girly girl, you like to put on your princess outfit and look in the mirror and be a princess. If you're a guy, you may want to be in your warrior outfit or whatever it is, if you're in the traditional masculine feminine training of the culture. But you play with identity when you actually see yourself in the mirror, in the bathroom, or whatever. And when you're a child, this seems to be flexible. It seems to be more fluid. That, yeah, you identify, that's your body. Okay, there's your body. Yep. And unless you have some kind of very deep emotional issue that is attached to your body, generally it's just, you're okay, that's your body. But as you move into adolescence, you begin to pick up through the whole ego narrative, tying you into the culture outside of you, tying you into the world, you begin looking at yourself as someone who needs to be able to protect yourself from the world. And in order to do that, you've got to have the right image. You've got to come across in such a way that it either intimidates people so they don't want to beat you up, or it inspires people and makes them want to like you, or whatever it is. You begin to realize you need to look good. So you pose in front of the mirror, and generally with gender trainings, if you're a typical guy, you pose there so that you look really good, and the girl, because in the gender training, the girl's always flawed and she's not okay because she's a girl, she's not a guy. So you're always looking at the flaws. How can I fix them? You see, and so this type of looking at yourself in the mirror, literally, can be confused with letting your reality mirror you. Now, we want to distinguish the two mirrors. One is a physical mirror in which you look in yourself and you can see what you look like. And you try to see what you look like from other people's point of view to see if it's good or not. Okay. Now the other mirror is the mirror, is the reality mirror, in which if you have negative thoughts, if you have anger and resentment at somebody, it goes out there, then you get a certain type of reflection back to you. It's not, doesn't mean that you're, it's like a picture of Dorian Gray, that where all of your terrible stuff keeps piling up, but on the outside you look absolutely fabulous. But that is an interesting concept, that people are hoping that somehow or another the bad stuff can be hidden away somewhere, and that the really good stuff can be shining and people can see it and so on. But because you're afraid of being humiliated, shamed, etc., because you're afraid of being rejected and so on, you realize that you've got to have an image. You've got to live your image. You've got to get a good facade. You've got to protect yourself. And you've got to hide. You don't want people to see you, because what if they don't like you? What if they shame you? What if they attack you? What if they hurt you? Oh gosh, you've got to hide. You don't want them to see you. So you put up a facade, you and the ego, destructive ego, put up a facade that will be what you think, what you decide, that you want the world to see. Now, sometimes it takes good behavior to maintain this facade. But nevertheless, in order to protect yourself, you put up defenses, you put up walls, armoring, resistance, strategies to keep the competition, to keep any threats away, to protect yourself, because you don't feel safe. If you've been gaslighted, in other words, you've been said, no, what you're thinking and feeling, that's not true. That's not real. You're really thinking and feeling this. If you've been gaslighted that way, then you're not only is your intuition gone, but you'll do whatever the destructive ego says, because you have no other clue, right? So you lie, you stay shallow, you hide, you blame somebody else, but you're angry about it. There still is the little child ego in there feeling entitled, like, why is this happening to me? This is not fair. It's not fair. Okay? So you become, in the mirror which comes to you, is of the context. The mirror brings events and circumstances and situations that reflect who you are. The ego brings that to you. That's the mirror from your reality. And it shows you what you're thinking and what you're feeling and how that impacts your reality. What a fabulous, fabulous setup for a free will universe, all right? That what you think and feel and so on goes out there and is reflected to you in your manifestations. It's so powerful. So incredibly powerful. But of course, when you're a teenager, you just don't know that you're that powerful, or your ego will tell you that you're that powerful. But that power is to overcome, is that becomes power over. So the key is that you become the reflection in the mirror. It's like you look out into the world and you see this image of yourself and what they think of you, what the world thinks of you. Okay, and so you become lost in the reflection. You're unable to see who you really are because you're so concerned about what other people think and survival. So you're split in two. There is part of you that you think is the real you. Now, actually, this is the judged you. And you think that's the real you because that's the part that you think that if other people see, they will attack you or take, hurt you or or abuse you or whatever it is. So this quote-unquote real you think you are, is the one that hides. You're afraid you might be unlovable, unworthy, and you don't want to be intimate with anyone because you don't want them to see this. What they see inside, oh my gosh, they're going to see who I really am, and they won't like me anymore. They won't love me, right? And then you don't want people to really, because you don't want people to see you. Okay, you don't want people even to hear you, because that would reveal too much of you. So it in a sense, it closes off your higher will, your throat chakra. You kind of hide behind the facade, and then you try to be the pretend you. At first, you know it's a pretense. At first, you know it's a facade you've got to put on. That pretend you is the one who's earning love and validation. So you're now totally split. This is a never-ending conflict, and what it creates is a support and a substantiation of a fear-based reality. You never are safe. And this stormy, tense, internal self, because of course it also happens where your hormones go kaboom, right up, you know, blow off the roof there. It intensifies everything. And so that intense you is hiding behind the facade and is trying to pretend desperately that the facade that you're putting out there is who you are. That's the poised individual, the person who's easygoing, who's really, you know, on top of everything. Okay. So you wonder, why do you have to go through all of the suffering with ego, right? Well, you see, those of you who know that you're wrapping up all this whole illusory journey, that perhaps you're even on your last lifetime, you want to be there or whatever, that this split of your identity between your fake self and your supposed real self, and then there is actually underneath that judge self is the real self. But you're doing this, you're facing this because this is a piece, for some of you, it's a piece of your destiny. It's a piece of your destiny to really deal with the ego, to learn about the ego, to break the power of the ego over yourself, to heal the ego, and so on. Because the ego is generally the first limitation you get in your life. But it's also the last threshold, the last hurdle before oneness. So what we're seeing here is this, is that you're doing this because this is part of your wrapping up birth and death. This is part of your homeward journey. And the homeward journey, the last piece is really the ego. When you ascend through the inner planes, up to the planes of pure love, beyond the illusion, beyond the duality, you start here, the physical, you go to the astral plane, you still have ego there. You go to the causal plane, you still have ego there. You go to the mental plane, you still have some ego there. But in order to go from the fourth plane out of the universe, out of the illusion bubble that you're in, into the fifth plane of pure spirit, pure divine essence, pure divine being, you have to let go of the ego. It's there all the way through. Now, you have to work with it much more on the physical. It's much more subtle as in the higher planes as everything is. More subtle there, more refined. But this is the place that you make the turn. This is where the tire hits the road. This is where you make your fastest and greatest evolution, and you make your greatest level of growth, is right in the physical body. Yeah, you can do it in slow-mo. Not that time is of any concern, but you can spend thousands of years in the causal plane and the mental plane. But you decided, no, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do the fast track. This is going to be fun and exciting. I'm going to learn to manifest and da-da-da-da-da-da. And for that, you needed the ego. So you're doing this for yourself, but you're also doing it for the world. Every human being has an issue about what is their authentic and truer self. How can you be ruthlessly honest with yourself? How can you be true to yourself? How can you know your own truth? Form your own opinions and ideas and beliefs and so on until you can distinguish yourself from your ego. Because by the time you're in adolescence, you and your ego, you just don't know that you're anything other than your ego. And you're playing the split with your ego. So anyway, this is why we're doing this seminar today, is because what we want to do today is to heal the split and heal the mirror. All right, so now your number one purpose of the facade, because you're going to need to get rid of your facade, the number one purpose is to protect you. And so to protect yourself, to keep people from looking at you funny, from attacking you, from judging you, etc., etc., you think you got to be perfect. You think you've got to put out the really good image. Or you've got to stand at the back and look very knowing. And I'm on top of everything. I'm better than that. So the competition that you have with the world, you have to find a way that your facade makes you better than other people so that you are not under threat. Okay, so you set up your whole destructive ego program in your mind talk. My gosh, would you shame and judge yourself and others when you rationalize, when you blame, when you refuse to take responsibility, when you pretend, when you think about how important you are and how right you are and how wrong everyone else is. Your mind talk is just filled with this stuff where you explain to yourself, that's why I'm better than. The channel and Daniel knew a fellow who was a healer, and he basically had told the channel one time that he didn't get the fame that he deserved because he was such a high being that the people that would recognize him and invite him on to summits and to give seminars and so on could not perceive his glory, could not perceive his high vibration. So therefore, he was invisible to them. Well, that's just so spiritual ego, and sometimes spiritual ego is really worse than other egos because it really catches you for a long time. It's really tough on your spiritual journey to really get entangled there in being better than. So we would suggest that if you find any of that going on in your mind, please let it go, okay? Of course, the ego also takes everything personally. So if somebody forgets to call you back, you say, oh, they didn't call me back. That's because they don't like me, and that's because they this and this against me and blah, blah, blah. That's destructive ego, okay? Now, another way of finding how the destructive ego works is in the building of the facade. And You see, when you are, when you're an adolescent, you're trying to find your facade identity. You're trying to find the identity that fits you, that you can live in and be proud of or work with. And like a bully, you know, I'm tough, I'm strong, you know. The rebel is a famous one. A lot of adolescents love the rebel. I'm the maverick, you know. Then there's the martyr. I'm the noble one. Then there's all sorts of things. And people tag themselves according to their tribe. You know, it's like in the dating app. You know, a woman will call herself yoga gal, or the guy maybe be surfer guy or something. You know, they will associate themselves with something to peg what tribe they're in, what kind of interests that they have. So you take on identities and you play with identities during your adolescence, and you take part of this tribe. Now, all of this stuff, you're seeking perfection in your facade, and you're building your brand. It's like branding yourself, okay? People who get into public work and so on, they brand themselves and make themselves distinctive, right? So everybody brands themselves, but not everybody does it so well that they can make fortunes off of it on TV or wherever. Okay, now a lot of the identifying where the destructive ego is at work is where in your facade you're trying to build the optimal, the biggest and best image for your gender. In traditional gender identities is that guys are strong and tough and impervious to criticism and so on, that they're fighting for whatever, and they're always strong, competent, they know everything, they make money, they da 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 da. Oh, there's this whole man code expectation. The man code teaches a man that in order to be a man, you cannot be vulnerable. You cannot be weak. You must always be strong. You can never let anyone see a weakness. And if you're weak, they will attack you. And if you see someone else is weak, you have a total green light to go attack them and bully them. Others so that you're in the in group, that you're part of the best, right? Now, under the female categories is generally being smart and beautiful and caring and supportive and fit and looking good on all sorts of things for the female side, as well as, of course, being part of the in clique or in group. And so this is terrible in a sense, because it forces people to build their identities around their gender. And nobody has bigger problems with than this than LGBTQ people. It's like, oh my gosh, So although there's gay guys who really know how to play macho, the thing is that it's still fake, it's still facade, it's still kind of building it up so that you will get some approval and validation from your culture. Now, there's a dark, what we call the dark masculine qualities. The negative ego, the destructive ego, will tend to use these qualities, and the ego becomes very destructive, because what they insist, what the the destructive ego requires is that you be on good behavior to match your facade. You have to act like your facade is real. And the good behavior doesn't last all that long. People cannot stand being in good behavior because it's not where what they feel, what they think. They're trying so hard to build this facade that generally people on good behavior can start out great in relationships, for example, but they will all crumble later on. They'll start out great in work, in business, and success, and so on, but they'll crumble because you cannot sustain good behavior forever. You just can't. It's just too stressful. And so people who are like LGBTQ people come up against this extra burden on top of all the stress about identity they've already had to undergo. And sometimes it just makes them blow. And as part of, say, the macho for a straight man to be to really be macho and so on, he fears weakness. He fears gender fluidity. And so he might be really anti-gay. He might be willing to go and bully and beat up gay people or people from some other ethnic group or whatever to show that he's top, that he's the bully. And that's just a way to establish a sense of dominance, right? Now, LGBTQ people, on the other hand, have found that they can't really dominate really very well. It's not natural to them. They actually have to acknowledge gender fluidity. And the reason there's so much more voice for the people of LGBTQ people is because it's part of their destiny at this part of time in the planet, and part of their gift of evolution to the planet is to free people from the dark masculine and the dark feminine qualities that keep people trapped in brands that are not true to themselves. Now, we did, the channel wrote up a whole article on the dark masculine and dark feminine and the light masculine and the light feminine, which is the traits you want to move to. And it's on a website called greaterselfprocess.com. And it's at, and you just look on there and you see articles and you go down to dark to light. Okay, so if you go to dark to light article, you'll find dark to light, masculine, dark to light, feminine, and the light masculine and the light feminine are freeing, expanding, and you can be more authentic fulfilling that. Okay. But what this brings you to, all of this stuff with ego, and of course the ego just keeps building itself stronger and stronger, and it's anchored in pretty much by the time you're in your late teens. And so by the time you're in your 20s, it's possibly the time when your ego reaches its peak. Its best peak, because if you know anybody who's 20, 21 or so, and or remember yourself, that's when you thought you knew everything. Well, if I were president, then I would do blah, 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 blah. You know, you just had the answers and so on. Well, as an adult basically wears this down. Relationships wears down your egos, two egos rubbing against each other, grinding each other down, etc. It's one of the ways that by having resistance from the world that you get that feedback to shift and change your ego facade, to stop identifying with the facade and begin to find and search for you. Now, there are questions you can ask yourself to identify what the negative ego or the destructive ego has done, has gotten to you. It's, for example, do you feel unsafe in the world? Do you feel the need to have your facade on firmly when you leave, you know, when you head out the door or you start your Zoom call? You see, how do you put yourself together to deal with the world? Do you justify your mistakes by blaming people? Do you try to convince people that you're important? Do you still hide and you don't want anyone to know any information about you that you're not in complete and total control over? Can you receive appreciation, love, and praise? How easy is that? Okay. Have you punished yourself? Do you punish yourself and sabotage yourself to redeem yourself, to pay price for your shame? Do you take on too much duty and obligation and then crush yourself in it? How do you respond to competition? Do you run away? Do you fight? Do you just stand back and observe and pretend not to be involved, or you're an outlaw? Okay, how do you deal with that? What compensational behavior do you do to cover up weaknesses and vulnerabilities? How do you hide them from people? What's your story? Does your story of struggle and victimhood and being misunderstood? Have you been a workaholic? Do you push and drive everyone around you to do more? Do you study self-help obsessively? Do you go to therapists frequently? Do you mull over your issues and dig around in all your childhood traumas endlessly? Are you the fly in the soup person that good stuff happens, but you always find something wrong with it? That's ego, okay? Do you stay shallow? How much intimacy do you allow yourself to have? And if you're in a situation where you could be revealed and your weaknesses seen, do you reject other people and push them away before they can reject you? How does your ego deal with illness? Just as you are getting better, some other problem shows up. That's a story, a narrative. How do you use your illness to hide, run away, avoid things? All right, so when you push outside, if you grow, if you start evaluating these things, you start growing, you start becoming more aware, generally the ego doesn't like, the destructive ego doesn't like you to get out of your box. It doesn't like you to expand the box. And it will whip you back through some kind of negative feedback to you from your reality to get you back and to shrink back in the box. Normally it's fear of some sort. But it can also be powerless rage. Pushes you right back into the little box. It may forces you back into being in your immature space, which is where the ego can control you, because the ego never grows up. It doesn't want you to, because then it can't beat you up. It can't have revenge on you. It's got to keep you immature. It's got to keep you thinking that you're weak. It's got to keep you asking the ego, what's the truth? What's going on here? It's got to keep you ignorant and wondering what's going on. Otherwise, it can't control you. However, this facade, we want to make one more point. The facade is you, really. How did you choose your facade? What qualities, what principles of life did you use to create your best facade? Because even if you are a guy and you choose a facade that's part of the man code, all the part of the tough, strong guy, and all that goes on with that, even if you do that, the exact qualities of that facade, there'll be some qualities that actually are true to you. So when you do that, when you pull off that facade, there's parts of it that you actually are truthful. And so what we would suggest, often the facade is the you that you would like to be, but first acknowledge you are probably already that person, at least in spirit. The facade is reflecting something true in you. Could your facade actually be achievable in spirit? Not in form, but in spirit. What we're going to do is we're going to give you the steps to heal the facade, heal the ego, and to become whole. It's going to require you to expand, encounter your destructive ego who wants to shrink you back. It's going to involve you acknowledging the truth of you that still is somewhere in the facade. And while we're not going to spend a long time on these steps, the meditation that we have for you today is a very extensive, intricate ritual. Archetypal process to really come to terms with this, to clean, clear, heal, and step into a space with a positive ego and ready for oneness, ready for unification with the divine. So all the work of this seminar is going to be in this meditation. So we're going to just tell you what goes on in the meditation. It's part of the steps. First of all is to acknowledge and heal, if you can, the dark masculine and dark feminine, because that's a trap of the collective that keeps you obedient to the, what you might even say, the collective destructive ego, because there is that too. Okay. So when you embrace the light masculine and light feminine, and we say that every person has the masculine and feminine within them. So when you, no matter what your gender or gender fluid position you are, you do want to inculcate to yourself the light masculine and light feminine, which you can find there on that greater self process, the light to dark article. Number two, acknowledge that your truth. Now, this is a reminder because you've heard us tell you this before, and you've heard other spiritual teachers tell you, you've heard people who are wise tell you, you've experienced some of this in meditations, etc. And that is that, as we said before, the universe is all oriented specifically for you. The ego came to work with you as your servant. And you are here in free will universe when you are supported by your team. Okay, you can receive the love and happiness and joy and success you want. But in order to be, in order for your team to give you all of this stuff, in order for you to receive it, okay, you've got to acknowledge, your team. You can't say, I'm doing it myself, because you could not possibly pull off this whole lifetime on your own. Your team is there working with you, step by step with you, side by side with you all the time. And they love you. And when you are authentic, they're available and they can give it to you. But you've got to be authentic, okay? But in that sense, acknowledge your spiritual path. This acknowledging your safety and truth is acknowledging you are on a spiritual path that is you, okay? And you are a divine being having a physical experience, and your spiritual team and are supporting you. You are safe. Now, your body is going to die, so your body is never fully safe, okay? But your spiritual self, your psyche, your being is safe. It is loved. It is safe. Because the path is all about you fulfilling your mission of knowing yourself, maybe having a gift for the world, and stepping into divine union. That's your missions, okay? And you will get there. It's your destiny. You cannot not get there. So the risks that you take in order to step out and be authentic will garner support from your reality, and you'll be safe. So just be aware of that. It's really a path that has safety in there. We've talked many times about the four pillars: love, freedom, empowerment, and safety, trust. And that's the hardest one for everyone to get, because you're taught that the world is dangerous. You're absolutely taught it as real and true, you know. So to trust your team and to allow yourself to feel that safety, they protect you. You're protected. And essentially, you're protected until you get your mission done that you want to do in this lifetime. So just remember that. That's your truth. Okay, number three, accept your facade. That's accepting that there's some parts that are true to you that are in the facade. Understand that you have it. You don't need to protect it anymore. You don't need to keep a fake facade anymore. And you can heal when you clear out and release your fake facade. You also can heal your destructive ego. You can heal it by forgiving it. You can heal it by freeing it from its burdens. You can shrink it back down from the bully it's become, back down to its original job level. It's like it's like a little being. It's like an elemental, or you know, an elf or something. You know, it is a small part of you that plays a big role there. And you can give it support too, and give it a healing environment. Number four is to find your positive ego, the one that curled up in a ball and hid away when the destructive ego came into being. To find the positive ego, to wake it up, to love it, to heal it, encourage it, and start allowing it to feel safe and giving it the right context so it can go out and start giving you good stuff. And number five, become intimate with yourself and your authentic self. Now, the destructive ego doesn't want you to be intimate with yourself. It always wants you to be thinking about who you should be out there to all those other people, or who you should appear to be like, or pretend to be like. But you need to sit with yourself, be quiet, and be yourself, and just be. There's nothing to do. Just be and just notice. Your mind talk will come in and out. What's it doing? Is it harsh? Is it worried? Is it loving? But if you can say, I love myself, is that true? Does it feel true? Say, I'm valuable and I deserve good things. Does this feel true? Does it feel fake? Start feeling for what is true. If it's fake, recognize, wait a minute, I've bought into something that's fake. What would it feel like if feeling lovable and worthy, I felt true, that this was really true to me, that I am lovable and worthy? What does that feel like? What would it feel like if that was inherently in my life? Feel the true you, because that's true for every human being, every divine being. You're deserving, you're lovable, you're worthy. Now think about your fears of visibility and your need to hide and obscure yourself. You'll need to forgive yourself for that. You'll need to think about how you played games, manipulated. Forgive yourself because, hey, you had to do that to survive. But underneath all of this, this whole facade is a light intention. The light intention is the original purpose, which was to love you and protect you so you could grow up, so you could thrive. That light intention worked. You're here. That light intention was so that you could grow and be on your path of destiny. Yes, you had to go off into the darkness. You had to put on the facade. But dear one, it was exactly the best thing you could do at the time. It saved your ass, really. Yeah. Now you need to define authenticity, finally. What is an authentic person? Do you know anybody? Sense their confidence, their ease, their happy demeanor, their unique perspectives on life. They love themselves. They enjoy their lives. They expect the world to be supportive and friendly. Authentic people listen to other people. They're not threatened by anybody. They can work with others as co-equals and not have to lead and dominate. They express themselves kindly. We have a list here. They create a safe place for themselves and include others in their safe space. They trust themselves. They don't pretend to be anything they aren't, but they also don't have fake humbleness or spiritual ego. They play no games and will not deceive you or use little white lies or flattery to make you feel good in the moment. Now, template for yourself. We're going to be doing this in the meditation. You want this to be natural and normal. You want to be authentic all the time. Okay? You may have to take each item that we mentioned, each thing we mentioned, and write an essay about what you've done and what you would say and do instead to get an idea. How do you live your life as an authentic person? What are the actions that you would take? What is a state of mind you would hold? What would you do differently from what you do now? You can take several instances and write a new story, a new script to play with, and well, we don't have the time to help you do that today. As always, our seminars, which last 4 hours or so, are really weekend seminars. So we're going to leave this up to you, that if you find that you've done some things that are inauthentic, write them down and journal what you could do that would be authentic. And it has to say, okay, it's not about worrying what other people think, but it is respecting them. It is being kind to them. Because when you're, as we repeat, when you're authentic, you're supported 100%. So start acting. Start practicing being authentic. Start practicing thinking that you are loved and safe and really owning it every chance you get. Don't judge yourself, but basically, if you fail, you know, no big deal. Just pick yourself up and say, all right, I'm going to love and value myself. I'm going to feel safer. I'm going to rely on my team. And get in contact with the divine. Get in touch with your team. Work with your team. We even did a seminar on working with your team. And it's always wonderful and uplifting to do. Number six, create new context for the future. The context of you being divine, the universe is a gift, the universe supportive of you, and all that, being who you are. We're going to give you what we call the speech. We've written it out, or had the channel write it out. The speech that we're going to give you in the meditation. This is the new context that you can absorb, that you can take within yourself. Accept yourself totally is what it's all about. Just accept yourself, warts and all, accept yourself completely and be grateful to your team. Thank you, God, Goddess. Okay. And number seven, really start intending to show your love. Figure out how do you want to show your love? How do you want to demonstrate your love? Own your power. How do you want to create a safe space for others? How do you want to create safety for yourself as you become more visible, as you share who you are? You know, it doesn't mean that you, if there are people you don't trust, that you've opened your heart to them in a very vulnerable thing. It's not about, that's ego, about being weak and vulnerable and weak and ignorant. You know, when you know a person is a bit of a scam artist, a con person, it's not like you have to bring up big walls against them. You just know who they are. You just stand in your authenticity and you don't let them con you. Okay, so don't fear being vulnerable. Don't fear, because then you have your intuition back. You can sense people. You can read people better. When your intuition comes back, your vulnerability is actually a strength. Your intuition becomes strong. You're not naive. You're not ignorant. You don't have to know everything to navigate life. That's an ego message, of course. So don't compromise yourself. Learn to express what you're feeling and thinking with kind words. Not little white lie words, but true words, truth. And let people like you, just the way you are, let them just appreciate who you are. So many people have tried to put on a facade in order to get a relationship going, a love relationship. And what we're seeing is like, you mean that person just ran away after the second date, after the first date? It's like, that is disappointing. But however, look at this. You want a relationship that's whole and complete, that has depth, that has love, that has intimacy, has sharing, has respect, has caring. You want a full, complete relationship. And if the person, just touches in and goes, ooh, and runs away, well, you wouldn't want to please that person anyway. You wouldn't want to dance to their tune anyway. By doing so, you would lose yourself. You want them to love you as you are, just as you are. Okay? And part of this is about taking responsibility for everything, not blaming anything, not putting it off on anything else. And just take all the feedback, that mirror of your reality, take all the feedback and make new choices if you don't like what the feedback is. And look forward to more good things. We've said this to you, many of you in private sessions, and we said it to you in seminars, we're going to say it again. Whenever you're under stress, you don't know what to do, tell yourself this message. This comes down from the highs, from the highest levels, because it's about you, and it's called. It's all going according to plan, and it's all going to turn out well. Just remind yourself, it's all going to plan, even if you have no clue what the plan is. If you think of it as a plan, then you align yourself with your spiritual path and the track that you chose on this lifetime. No, you didn't intend in your plan to hurt yourself. But if you take what is hurting you and say, okay, it's going according to plan, you immediately shift yourself onto the track of your soul path, of your spiritual journey. So by choosing that anything that happens is according to plan, then you know that it's already on plan as well to turn out well. And your destiny is union with God, God is all it is. So if that isn't turning out well, we don't know what it is. And when you're on a track to that, your daily life turns out well too. And that's the idea, because that reflection to you from your world reinforces what you already know, is that you are a divine being having a physical experience. You're a divine reality creator. And your feedback, that mirroring to you, you can utilize. You can create in your free will universe what you want. It's absolute exquisite system. A fabulous setup. So we're going to close now for a break of 10 minutes. And when we come back, we're going to answer your questions and go deeper into it. And then we're going to take you on a meditation to heal the destructive ego, to become free of your fake and false identities, that facade, letting that go, and to begin developing your positive ego in your authentic new life with a little beautiful little touch into the oneness, into the expansive future view. All right, dear ones, farewell for now.